Hello, this is Randa Alvord, and I'm on the campus of Utah State University in Logan, Utah. Today is March 15th, and I'm interviewing Stephanie Hamblin. Stephanie, can you introduce yourself, including your education background?
Sure. My name is Stephanie Hamblin. I am the director of the Exploratory Advising Center here at Utah State University. I have a bachelor's degree in Management Information Systems and a master's degree in Instructional Technology and Learning Sciences, both from Utah State.
So have you grown up in Logan, lived here your whole life?
Actually, I haven't. I was born in Logan, and my parents moved to Washington, D.C., to a suburb right outside there. And so I did all of my elementary school, middle school, high school back on the East Coast. I came out to what was now BYU-Idaho, formerly Brooks College, so that will totally date me. But then I transferred here to Utah State and finished my degree, and then just absolutely loved Logan. I loved Utah State, and got a job here as an office assistant and worked my way up over the past 25 years. So
that's cool. So how long have you been an advisor?
So I've been an advisor for about 15 years. I did entry-level academic advising in the College of Natural Resources and then moved over to the undecided office, and I've been here since then.
That's cool. Can you tell me kind of more about what you do, how you might describe your work to other people?
Sure. So I am the director of the Exploratory Advising Center, so a big part of what I do is administrative. I represent the undecided population of students, which is fairly different from those students that identify currently with a major focus area of interest. So a large part of my job is administrative, but I also do advising for students that are interested in admission to the Huntsman School of Business program. Another piece of my advising role is to work with students that have been suspended from Utah State. So I'm responsible for the notification of the suspension. I work with students that are interested in appealing their suspension. And then the best part is those students that want to come back after leaving in less than good standing, not always a suspended student, but who have left the university and are interested in coming back. So I'm the chair of the Academic Action Committee, and we work with those students through the readmission process to see if we can't find a pathway for success for them to complete their academics here at Utah State.
Okay. And what qualifies a student as being suspended? What markers do they not meet?
So typically, the suspended students that I work with, it's academically based. Okay. So they have had a minimum of two semesters below a 2.0.
Okay.
So anything to do with conduct or disciplinary, those kinds of things do not fall under the scope of suspension in my role.
Okay. And you mentioned kind of the directing aspect of things, too. Can you share about your experience as a director, maybe what advice you'd give for other directors or people who want to be maybe a supervisor?
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely challenging to try and balance the academic piece and still have connection with students on a day-to-day basis. And I know that some directors choose not to, or their job does not allow them to have that opportunity, but I think it's so valuable that you're able to have some component of the day-to-day academic advising and interaction with students. I'm very much a hands-off supervisor. That's my personality. You know, I believe that if you hire the right people, that they will develop and grow professionally. If you give them autonomy, certainly with mentorship and guidance, that's the best kind of environment to work in as an employee. I've worked for individuals that have been micromanagers, and I've had absolutely 100% autonomy, and I think finding a balance between that is really important. I think it's important to hire for fit. It's easy to hire somebody that has a master's degree in a subject area or something that you are, you know, interested in. Academic advising, I don't think, is rocket science. Mm-hmm. But I do believe that if you hire for fit, whether that's personality, how that new hire is going to impact your advising center is almost more important than, do they know the general education requirements? Do they have experience with our system?
Mm-hmm.
I have an open door policy. My staff know if my door is closed, it's just not really closed, right? It's it's a visual closure, but I encourage them to talk and to meet with me regularly. I refer to them as colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
I think that in this structure, in the workforce, we do have a hierarchical flow. I mean, at the end of the day, somebody has to be responsible for, but I also believe in promoting within, for developing my staff professionally, which does come at a cost. This last year, 2018, we lost an advisor who passed away. We had another advisor who got a fantastic opportunity for promotion in Oregon, and my staff assistant had a wonderful opportunity for advancement, which I think is part of the role of a supervisor. Mm. 3 in 1 year is a little bit much,
yeah.
But I definitely think that that's important.
Mm-hmm.
To provide an appropriate level of mentorship, professional development, and autonomy.
Yeah, I think that's beautiful. And part of what we tell our students is success looks different.
Absolutely.
In different places, so advisors need to honor that themselves too. So you talked a little bit about the students you advise in exploring and then also students who are in kind of academic jeopardy a little bit. Can you tell me more about them? Any kind of unique characteristics your students have?
So I think with the exploratory population, we recently changed our name to exploratory because I think undecided has a negative connotation.
Mm.
And we have students that are, 4.0 presidential scholars, all the way down to a student who maybe didn't meet the index for admission at Utah State. I don't think that's necessarily unique, but I think that we have that whole gamut is what is challenging in an exploratory setting. Oftentimes, colleges or departments get to set their admission standard, and ours is a 2.0, certain ACT scores, and that can be very challenging.
Mm-hmm.
Helping a student find their passion when they have pressures from mom and dad, from themselves, from partners or spouses, family, to hurry up and decide and pick a major. Fighting that is challenging.
Mm-hmm.
We have students that are as young as I met with a student a couple weeks ago who is 15.
Oh, wow.
He has done advanced work, but his ability to be successful at the university is really unique. We also have students that have come back and returned to Utah State not knowing what they want to do at 60, 70 years old just for lifelong learning.
Mm-hmm.
And a natural fit is in this exploratory arena. I think, the students that get suspended typically for academics, it's not because they're not smart enough. It's not because they're not committed. It's life throws them a curveball, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's necessarily unique, but I think coming back to school as a single parent or a newly divorced individual or just non-traditional in general, being overwhelmed with all of the resources that are available, not knowing how to approach or ask questions can be challenging.
Yeah. And retention is challenging with exploratory students,
retention
too.
Retention is really challenging, and I find myself advocating across campus when we have a retention meeting and statistics are thrown out that this college is at, 79% retention, that's fantastic, and this other college or department is at, 68%, and then you have exploratory, and I find myself having to tone down. I get passionate about that not every student is going to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
We shouldn't retain every student.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we should make sure that students have opportunities to be successful and know what's available to them, whether it's next semester or whether it's 2 or 3 semester break and coming back to Utah State.
The plan can definitely look different depending on the need of the student. Along those lines, and maybe this is advice that you give to every student, but also what advice would you give to every student if you could?
I think probably the one takeaway that I would share with a student is to visit with your academic advisor once a semester, no matter what. Whether it's to celebrate an accomplishment, a success, whether it's to seek out help, whether it's just to touch base and say, I heard from, you know, my roommate, my family, my mom, my dad, my grandma, my grandpa, whatever. Is this true? And, it, you know, is this the best option for me? I think I would tell a student, I tell my students I want to meet with you before Halloween and before St. Patrick's Day every semester. And that may be for registration schedule. That may be how do I get involved in clubs. That may be I'm depressed and I don't know where to go. But a minimum, once a semester, come and meet with me and let's just take the pulse of where you are.
And that helps with scaffolding of exploring students too, of building upon each. A lot of advisors have load kind of distribution issues and funding. Do you guys see that in your office as well when you're meeting with students that many times?
We do. We have our average advising load is about 450 to 550, depending on additional responsibilities. The challenge that we find is the students that are high achieving get some attention. The students that are low achievers are getting attention. We refer to that as swirling on our campus, that we have these students in the middle pocket that get caught up in the leftover, right? It's hard to remember that we are advising adults. So they have opportunities to come in. We don't have mandatory advising after the first semester. We've tried some different approaches with placing holds, not placing holds, lots of nudge emails, encouragement. But it is challenging because with that kind of a load, it's easy to take care of the high and it's unnecessary to take care of the low. And those middle ground is please come in and you hope for the best.
Yeah. And other areas, sometimes they see that as freshmen and seniors get attention and the junior sophomores are kind of swirling, like you mentioned, too. Within kind of FERPA protection and different things, do you have any favorite stories from advising that you can share with us?
I mean, I think I have favorite stories every day. I really do. I get to meet with a lot of different students. Sometimes that outcome is really sad initially. You know, they come in and they're teary and they're crying and please don't suspend me. And, you know, my life is going to be over. My parents are going to make me move out. To those students, that one in particular that comes to mind that came to the Academic Action Committee, which is a committee that some students go through for readmission. Student came in and wanted engineering. And so we talked to him about some of the challenges and the rigor. And one of my colleagues asked a really pointed question and said, why engineering? And this student said, well, you know, that's what my family does. And one of my other colleagues said, well, if you could do anything, you know, money wasn't an object, education wasn't an object, what would you like to do? And it was quiet. It was one of those uncomfortable silence moments for a few minutes. And then the student sat up in his chair and he became animated, and he shared with us this lifelong passion of doing something along the lines of landscape architecture. And it was just, it was like watching a flower blossom, or, I mean, he was just animated. And then he said, but I'm here to talk about engineering. And you could see that sadness. And throughout this process, it's about a half an hour meeting, we were able to talk to him about a variety of different programs that he could use some of this engineering knowledge, the math skill sets, how he could talk to his family about a potential degree in landscape. we admitted him. He came. I've lost track of him, so I don't have a happy ever ending. But I do know that he was working with a landscape advisor, and watching him have that experience of exploration and determining that this is his life and his choice, and there were lots of resources, not just these are the courses you take, but opportunities to be involved and opportunities to be able to share with him some role play of how can you talk to your parents about this change and have them see the passion and the light. That's probably one of my favorite experiences. But I think every day there's a favorite.
Yeah.
There's a favorite. But there's also a really hard and sad, right? It's not daffodils and roses, but you can find little pieces, little nuggets of favorites in every day that we advise.
Yeah, I think that's beautiful. Cliche,
but it's true.
No, it's so,
I really think it's true.
Yeah, it's so beautiful. And Utah State has a strong engineering program, so a lot of students come with that intent, and it's connected to their identity often.
Yes.
So I think just somebody honoring, like, oh, maybe that's not what you want to do, for him probably was life-changing.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah. Made a big difference. So I think that's beautiful. We kind of talked about it's not just always roses and daffodils, right? And one of the increases that in at least in conversations that are happening in higher education is mental health needs of our students, and just the increase that we're seeing that more and more in our office. How has that increase affected you, or maybe what experiences have you had in your office with that?
It's a scary thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel that I'm trained to be equipped to help students. I am certainly equipped to provide referrals and resources, whether that's here's a website, here's a phone number, or let me walk you down to the office.
Mm-hmm.
We have the benefit of being right next door to our counseling and psychological services office. So just that proximity is very beneficial. But it is extremely challenging to be able to differentiate between what am I responsible to myself and to the student and to the university, what knowledge can I learn or should I learn, and where is that line? You know, if I'm asking a student about do they have a support system, and the student discloses to us that there's challenges with mental health, or it opens that door, and sometimes that can be a little bit scary. I don't fear for my life. I'm not in that sense, but how much responsibility do I have to this student as a human being, right? Just because they're here in my office and they're a real person. We've certainly seen an increase of students coming in with mental health challenges, also disclosing those mental health challenges. And I think a little piece of it is frustration. A little bit personally, I have had two of my children have struggled extensively with some mental health, and the resources available in the community are not enough. And then you scale that to Utah State, and we're short staffed, and it may be 3 or 4 weeks before we can get a student in. And it's hard not to take that. We call them baby birds, right?
Yeah.
We hold our hands together, and we.
Yeah.
It's hard not to take that baby bird home and support him or her. It's tricky.
Yeah.
It's overwhelming, but it's part of the job, and it's part of our responsibility to receive training, to provide training, to take advantage of the training opportunities that the university affords us, and to build a network of, if I don't know what to do, who can I go to today, right now? Who can I call and make sure that this student has a safe place?
Yeah. Yeah, we're not therapists, but we can have therapeutic skills in our tool belt and be able to properly refer depending on our students' needs. So in talking about mental health as well, how do you keep yourself energized and motivated on challenging days, or in other words, combat advisor burnout?
It's going to be a long pause now.
It's okay.
I think there's a variety of tactics. I mean, I'm fortunate to have a really great advising center, mm-hmm. And to have support both vertically and horizontally. Mm-hmm. But there are definitely days that are harder than other days. And just as I encourage my students to build a network of resources through faculty and other staff and clubs and organizations, I have a tribe. Mm-hmm. You know, some of those people are administrators. Some of those are colleagues outside of the academic advising community. Some of those people are, in other student affairs professionals with admissions, with orientation. So it's not so close mm-hmm. to advising. But I also think it's important to take a mental health day. I think it's important to get out and walk the quad. Mm-hmm. Enjoy the sunshine. Call up a colleague and say, hey, let's meet for coffee and juice. And let's just spend a half an hour not talking about academic advising. Let's talk mm-hmm. about, you know, the weather. Let's talk about the basketball game last night. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is, I think that you have to schedule that time in, though. I know there are more days than not that I'm eating lunch at my desk, mm-hmm. and that's not healthy, but I think that it's what we do as academic advisors. We work more than 40 hours a week, and we think about our students at night, and we send emails, mm-hmm. but I think having a network of support, whether it's administrators and faculty or if it's friends outside of work that you can go to and is a safe place. It's also really good to be able to have the opportunity for professional development. That's mm-hmm. something that our advising community affords us, whether it's on campus or whether it's through the state, the region. I know some of my colleagues are in Hawaii this week. I don't understand how I missed that invitation. But I think that also rejuvenates. You know, mm-hmm. having an opportunity to get out of your office and participate either as a learner or a mentor helps.
Helps, yeah. The Mega Region 10 combined conference is happening right now, and we all wish we were in Hawaii.
Totally,
yeah. Yes. Especially up here because it's so cold,
yes.
too. So I think that's great, and just the intentionality of making sure that you make space for yourself, too, and not just always giving to
you
students.
Yeah.
And we're in the profession because we care about other people, but we've also got to focus on ourselves once in a while as well. Before the interview, actually Stephanie and another colleague were talking about making cookies together too. So it is definitely something you practice as well. Along those lines, and you've talked about the impact that you have on students and your office has in working with students, how would you like your students to remember you?
I think the most important takeaway is that the students know that I don't know all of the answers, but that I will diligently work to help them find the answers. I have been accused of being a realist by my colleagues, by my supervisors, and my students. I believe passionately in allowing students natural consequences,
mm-hmm.
Allowing them to stumble, allowing them to find success. But I also feel that it's important for them to have that sense of trust,
mm-hmm.
And know that whether they have an appointment or not, if they are in need of help, whether it's a celebration or a crisis, that I'm there to advocate for them, mm-hmm. I'm there to support them, I'm there to lift them up, but I'm not going to make the decisions for them.
Yeah.
And I believe that my students feel that. I've had more than a handful of students say to me, wow, this news really stinks, or this news really sucks, but you are the first person that has helped me see the path I'm on may not be the best path.
Mm-hmm.
I also have options.
Yeah.
And they thank me for that. And that's hard. It's hard to tell a student you can no longer pursue this passion at Utah State University.
Mm-hmm.
But there's options. Mm-hmm. So I think just being trusted and being real, that's what I do.
That's what you do, yeah. Have you ever had students come back and just say to you, I wish you would just tell me what to do instead of giving me options?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do, and I tell them, they don't pay me enough to tell you what to do.
I love that response.
And then I expand, you know, expand on that and tell them, I don't know. I mean, we've had an opportunity to visit for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
You're asking me to make a decision for you that's going to impact the rest of your life. And I've known you for this brief period,
mm-hmm.
you know? But I do also help them understand that they're welcome to come back after they go home and ruminate and think about some of the things that we've talked about, that we can talk about consequences of choosing path A or path B, but that I'm not comfortable in making a life choice for them. I am comfortable in walking the path with them as they explore and helping them see big picture of intended and unintended consequences. Yeah. But I don't have a crystal ball.
Yeah. And part of college is a learning experience, not just within the classroom, but outside of it. Yeah. And students finding kind of their place and growing within those things, too. With that, is there anything that you would like to include that I didn't ask you?
I think I would just say I did not seek out being an academic advisor. Mm-hmm. I think it found me. And I cannot think of a more rewarding and challenging and gratifying opportunity than being an academic advisor and having the opportunity to help mm-hmm. shape the lives of future generations. It's incredibly gratifying. I'm incredibly thankful. And I'm incredibly tired. But I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah, and next time you'll go to Hawaii, right?
I may go to Hawaii with or without an advising conference at this point, but yes, definitely.
I'm going to combine two questions. One, looking back, what advice might you give yourself your first year as an advisor? And then if this is the same or maybe separate, what advice would you give someone who wanted to be an advisor?
I think I would tell myself the sky's the limit.
Mm.
I did not meet with an academic advisor when I went through my undergraduate program. I think I met twice, once to get into a pre-program, and the second time was to file graduation.
Mm.
I think I would tell myself that don't limit yourself.
Mm.
I would definitely tell people interested or new in the profession to get involved at multiple levels. I mean, certainly you need to learn the university, you need to learn the requirements, but I fell into academic advising. Mm-hmm. I started as an office assistant. I graduated on a Saturday and I started work on a Monday.
Oh, wow.
And I thought I had hit the big time. I was making $14,000 a year at a very prestigious institution. and I just couldn't imagine life being better than that.
Mm.
I had mentors who took me under their wing and said, you know, you're more than this. This is a great starting point. But what would you like to do that challenged me, that encouraged me to participate in opportunities that were somewhat advising related, but not directly. I started out when UAA mm-hmm. was UAOA as one of the first board members. I took minutes of that meeting,
mm-hmm.
And that led to networking with colleagues across Utah State campus, as well as faculty, as well as institutions mm-hmm. within the state. So don't sell yourself short. Don't settle for a $14,000 office assistant job, which I'm sure is like horrific sounding now. I know we pay a lot more than that. But to challenge yourself, just the same advice we give students.
Mm-hmm.
Network, find opportunities to do something that you're not comfortable with. Build friendships, build relationships, and the sky's the limit.
I think that's great. Thank you, Stephanie, so much for sharing your story. Thank you.